This is a Harper Guys production.
The following will contain adult subject matter and may not be suitable for all audiences.
The worst first date you've ever been on?
Welcome to the gallows.
I'm Jake. With me as always my co-host Adam.
Yo.
That's gonna get us started with our PSA.
Let's go. Visit us at thegallowspodcast.com. From there you can go to our Facebook and Twitter links. You can also visit us everywhere podcasts are found. If you have questions, comments, or case ideas, please email us at thegallowspod@gmail.com.
Thank you. I'm excited for tonight. I'm excited for tonight's story. It's got a little bit of everything. There's a few elements in it that are super interesting that I'm looking forward to your take on. Before we get into that, we'll touch on what's coming up in the world of executions, right? Michael Tassis is still up in Missouri. That's going to be on 6-6. This guy killed the two corrections officers while helping a friend of his escape from prison, right?
Okay.
6-15. About 10 days later, is going to be Dwayne Owen out of Florida. So this was actually just re-added to the docket, and then the very next day, it was put on hold again. This crazy person basically killed a 14-year-old babysitter, but he's being re-evaluated to see if he was mentally fit to be executed. So jury's still out on that, no pun intended. 7:20, we've got Jermaine Cannon. He's from Oklahoma. This gentleman escaped prison, and while on the lam, he killed his longtime girlfriend. And then newly added to the list on August the 1st is going to be Johnny Johnson, also out of Missouri. He raped and then killed a 7-year-old by dropping a boulder on her head. So those are what's coming up in the world of executions. And on to tonight's story.
I can't wait.
All right. So January 27th, 1996. You were freshly out of high school by a couple of years at that point, probably?
Si, senor.
Yeah. It was chilly morning, but it continued to be all right because it was an unseasonably warm weather in the greater Washington, D.C. area. A young man that wished to be anonymous, citing his faith, made a dreadful call to the park police at the Patuxent National Park. He had decided to take the long way to work because it was a warmer kind of morning, have the windows down, kind of get the whole serenity of the entire ride, you know what I mean? And he just didn't feel like the highway drive that day. Well, as he's going through the park, he sees what looks like a jacket on the side of the road. As he gets up to the jacket, it becomes very evident that that jacket is attached to a person. As he's getting closer, he can tell that about 10 yards in front of that person is another one, and about 10 yards in front of that person is another one. All along, right along the road, I'm talking 10 feet off the road, right down beside you. This almost 5 o'clock in the morning. I mean, I can't imagine being that scared.
And they were jackets?
Well, he noticed the jacket first. He just thought it was a jacket when he was driving, and he was like, holy cow, that's a person, because it was dark out.
Oh, okay.
So he's approaching it, right? Within 10 minutes, you've got park police on the scene. They show up. You have two officers that show up. They immediately call the FBI to come in and assist. It is quickly discovered that the victims were three women and that they were all from Washington, D.C. Their names were Tangi Jackson, 21 at the time, Tamika Black, 19 at the time, and Michonne Chin, 23 at the time. They were all pronounced deceased at the scene, and Jackson and Higgs each had gunshot wounds to the chest and the back, and Chin only had the one gunshot wound but to the head. to where definitely a difference in that a little bit. Investigators also located identification for all three women, as well as finding a planner that belonged to Jackson and contained tons of contacts, information, like, you know how a woman's planner is. Like, there's stuff that's in there, you know what I mean? Like, you can learn a whole lot of stuff by looking at a woman's planner.
For sure.
You know? So they're looking at all the events and the day's errands and appointments and all the things that go like that, and there was activity all over the place, but nothing that seemed super crazy. And then they got actually to the point in the planner where they found January 26th, which was the night before, right? So they get on that page, and they're kind of, it's kind of scribbled to where they're kind of seeing what they can find, and they find a phone number and an address and a license plate number, which I thought that was kind of interesting. They did too. So police quickly figure out that information all ties back to a gentleman named Dustin Riggs, who lives in the nearby town of Laurel, Maryland. Okay, so important to note here, Laurel, Maryland is obviously just outside of Washington, D.C., right? Kind of the area where everything comes together right there.
Gotcha.
So the police, you know, they want to know what's going on. So on the 28th, they bring him in for questioning, and he's confronted, and he says, yeah, I knew Tangi Jackson for sure, that they had hung out a couple times, and that their plans for that day had actually been canceled. He explained that he had been called by the mother of one of his two children and that she was setting up a family party on the 27th. Her name is Phyllis Smith. Smith goes ahead and confirms to the police that Higgs, in fact, was with her the entire time and that he actually had a best friend, a guy named Mark Haynes, actually had showed up to the house with him. They had got there about 8 p.m. on the night of the 26th and that they had stayed overnight. They drank a little too much. I mean, I'm sure not the first party planned where people had drank a little more, you know,
for sure,
you know, got to sleep it off over the night goes on. And they looked at it and the timeline kind of it kind of ruled him out as far as like being probable if his alibi held up, because the bodies were found right about 5 a.m. and they even have two witnesses telling them that they actually saw the three women on the street about an hour and a half before that, right around 3:30, laughing and talking while they were walking. So it doesn't really line up between the two situations, right? To where they really can't do anything about him, you know? Like, we know that there's a connection, but there's not a connection that's big enough for us to do anything else, right?
Correct.
Well, the officers believe that he obviously knows more than what he's telling them, right? But with nothing to go on, they had to keep it going. So Higgs remains a person of interest in the case, but the case kind of goes cold because there's no one else to really look at. He's got an alibi. They don't really have anything at the scene that ties into it, right? So Higgs, however, though, from this moment on, does remain in custody. Why? Because he was involved in two separate shooting incidents, one a month before the three murders, another one 2 months before the murders. So these are pretty close timeline proximity to when the murders actually happen, right? I mean, three shooting incidents that you are somehow even being looked at in 3 months feels like a lot, right?
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, you get one a lifetime, I feel like that's kind of a lot. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, ironically, both of those situations were late night issues that had come up after an evening of partying. So every time alcohol was involved with getting a little bit wacky and things going a little crazy. So just to give you a little bit of light on what those were. In November of 95, Higgs and another man actually shot up a car using 38 caliber pistols and actually fled after an argument. So they got into an argument at the club, argue outside the club. Instead of shooting the guy, they shoot his car up and then they fled for that. So no one's injured in the shooting, but they were charged with unlawfully discharging a firearm and menacing. In December, Haynes, who is Higgs' best friend here, went to the home of a gentleman named Rodney Sims, and he's there to confront him about a girl that they've kind of both been seeing. We don't have all the details on it, but not the first time we've heard of a love triangle kind of getting nasty, you know? The argument ends up escalating, and Haynes actually pulls out a gun and starts firing shots. But he's firing shots, like, as he's running away from the house to where it's not like he's, like, standing there point blank, you know? It's unknown whether or not there was a gun in Mr. Sims' hand. That was never described in any of the information I could find. So we know that there was some kind of an attack that was there. The interesting part of this is that Haynes is the one doing the shooting in this situation. Higgs comes running out of a shed and starts firing into the same house. Like, I mean, that's your buddy having your back, I guess, but that seems like a bit extreme. Like, you don't even know exactly what happened. You just come running out of the shed where you were hiding. But, like, why were you hiding in the shed in the first place?
Yeah, that's
right.
Like, sounds like he maybe pansied out, and then all of a sudden, okay.
Right. I mean, that sounds kind of crazy, right? So Sims was actually hit, but his injuries were not life-threatening. So both men are charged with public intox and assault with a deadly weapon. Higgs gets a 3-year sentence, and Haynes only does 60 years and was released. Basically, what they argued in this case was, and I thought that this was interesting, is that Haynes didn't necessarily have the intent of going there and shooting Sims, right? But that the intent on Higgs by hiding in the shed was going to be to ambush somebody. That was what they used. I don't hate it. I don't love it. You know what I mean? I feel there's some real speculation.
I can kind of see that.
Right. I can see where it would be a mitigating factor, but kind of like, what were you doing in the shed then? Doesn't have a good answer, but I don't know that it's prosecutable for a difference of 3 years. 3 years in jail sounds like a long time, you know?
Yeah.
At least to me. So that's where they were after those two. Well, so he's in jail for this sit. In 1998, Higgs, Haynes, and then it turns out another guy that they're friends with, this guy's name is Victor Gloria. They were all charged in connection with a drug ring that included intent to distribute crack. Now, as a result of this, Higgs, who's already doing 3 years, he catches a 17-year sentence for this. Like, that ain't messing around money right there.
No, that's big time.
He was a high perpetrator in this ring. He actually was notified by his attorney, too, that Haynes and Gloria each received suspended sentences for their roles in the drug ring because they were considered to be minor to the trade. You would think that that would be some kind of a red flag. Well, what Riggs does not know in that moment is that immediately those guys are talking, but it's not going to be about drugs, right? So Haynes gets worried that Higgs is going to roll on him for the murders, right? So he decides that he's going to start talking first. So after getting the story from Haynes, they go to Victor, right? So they end up doing Victor and Haynes separately so that they can basically get their stories straight. You know what I mean? So interesting part here to note before we get into this next part, they both take deals at this point, right? So even though, and I thought this was interesting, the only official offer that's made to Haynes was consideration at sentencing. Basically, if you help us out now, we might be able to help you later. That's not a guarantee, but it's also not nothing, I guess, you know? So as the two stories come together, the events of the night kind of become clear with as many things as consistent among them. But it still becomes more dynamic even after we kind of know the story that happened there, because there's even more that goes behind it. Multi-layered. So on the night of January 26th, Higgs, Haynes, and Victor all left Laurel about 6 p.m., and they headed into Washington, D.C. to pick up Tangi, Tamika, and Michonne. They all hopped into Higgs' van, and they headed back to his apartment, about a 30-minute ride from the city out to where he lives in Laurel, right? While they were there for hours, they drank, listened to music, even smoked a little bit of weed, you know, hanging out. I mean, they're all in their young 20s at this point in time, right? I mean, the one girl was 19. Everybody else was in their 20s that's here. As the evening turns into early morning, Haynes and Tamika actually headed off to the one bedroom just to get a little bit of alone time, you know. Victor and Michonne actually go outside, and they're smoking a couple of cigarettes together on the front porch, just kind of hanging out, right? Well, all of a sudden, they hear all this screaming, yelling, things going on. Haynes comes running out of the bedroom, pair of boxer shorts on, from the bedroom just to kind of see what was going on. Tangi has a knife that she pulled out of the kitchen, and she's standing there screaming, just freaking out, and tells Higgs to stay away from her. Don't touch me. Get away from me. She starts freaking out. So she ends up telling everybody that he tried to hook up with her, and she like shot him down, and like he started getting super aggressive. So she ran to the kitchen to get a knife to see if she could like hold him off, you know? So the three women are kind of like, you know, to hell with this, we're out of here. And they take off walking, you know, find a cab. Well, on the way out of the driveway, Tangi looks down at the license plate on the van and said something to the effect of, y'all about to get fucked up for this one. And she writes down his license plate number. That doesn't seem like the smartest move to me. If you're already dealing with somebody that you feel like was going to forcibly rape you, that you would put something antagonistically out there. But that's exactly what happened. So the three men kind of stand there for a few minutes. And Haynes is kind of giving Higgs a hard time about ruining the evening. You know, he's like, you know, what are you doing, bro? Like, you kind of screwed this up for me. Like, why are you being a shitty wingman? You know what I mean? Well, Higgs kind of stands there and thinks about it, and he goes, she really do know a lot of people. And with that, he runs back kind of out of the stoop into the main part of the house, and he goes in, and he grabs his keys, and he grabs a .38 from the dresser. So they hop in the van, and they take off to go chase the girls down. By the time they catch up with them, the girls have made it about a mile walking, which, after a night of partying and you leave angry, I'm sure about a mile is about that point where we're like, shit, like we got a haul in front of us. You know what I mean? So Higgs pulls up and apologizes and say, hey, you know, I apologize. I'm drunk, you know, being a little bit ridiculous, you know. Now, after all the craziness, I'm feeling sober. Let me just give you guys a ride home. You know, like just get in the car, you know, we'll give you a ride home. So Haynes like, hey, I'll even jump in the front seat. That way you guys can just all sit in the back together. I said, okay, fine. So they go ahead and hop in the back. Car ride's pretty quiet. Victor would say later on that, like, he could hear the girls kind of chit-chatting every once in a while back in the back, and that every once in a while, Higgs and Haynes, who are in the front seat, would kind of be chit-chatting, because this is like a big Econoline, like, style van, right? Speaking to each other kind of quietly as they drove, and as they neared the Baltimore-Washington Parkway exit, super famous exit, that's where you get on. You either go into Baltimore or you go into Washington, either way, right?
Sure.
Said that as that happens, Higgs kind of glanced up in the rearview mirror for a minute to kind of see if anybody was looking, and he just doesn't pull off. He just kind of keeps going where they're going. Instead, he ends up making a couple of right turns, and they end up on the edge of this park pretty quickly, the national park we were talking about at the beginning. So a few miles into the park, Higgs pulls over the van and tells the girls to get out. Well, Tangie's pissed immediately, and she's like, this is messed up. She's like, you just drive us out of the way out here to drop us off and make us drive back? And Haynes, as he's getting out, is kind of like, yeah, something like that. Something that's basically the gist of it. They weren't exactly sure what those words were. But according to Victor, as Haynes is getting out, Higgs grabs him and he says, make sure they're all dead. Once out of the car, Haynes shoots Michon in the head at point blank range immediately and she falls. Soon as that happens, Victor leans forward and he's like, dude, what is going on? Higgs doesn't move. He just sits there, eyes locked on the rearview mirror, watching this happen behind him. That had to be some kind of a chilling moment. When you're panicked about what just happened and the other person that you're in the car with is completely stoic about what's going on. I mean, I would be completely unsettled by that, wouldn't you?
Oh, my God, for sure.
I mean, can you imagine what that's got to feel like? So as this is happening, he's asking this question, another shot goes off. He hits Tamika in the chest, and she decides to take off running. Well, then he turns, and he shoots Tanja also in the chest. So now they're both trying to run away. He then gets Tanja in the back, takes a few steps, and then finishes off Tamika in the back. That's why all three women are a little bit further apart from each other than what you would normally think with three people getting shot. As soon as the last one hits and they're all on the ground, Haynes goes, jumps back in the car, and they all take off from the scene. I mean, at this point in time, it's almost 5 o'clock in the morning. You know what I mean? There's nobody around anywhere at this point. Higgs was like, hey, we got to get rid of this gun. So they head to the Anacostia River and they throw the gun in. They're not sure who. Everybody claims it was somebody else, but the gun got thrown in the river, was never found, right? So we never have the murder weapon in this case. After they get done tossing the gun, all three men go back to Higgs' house where they shower. They collect everything that had been touched, every bottle, every can, every cigarette butt, everything they can find that any of the women had touched throughout the evening. They put it all into a trash bag, and then they wipe the house. Like, to listen to them describe this, they spent almost 45 minutes wiping down a one-bedroom apartment. That's a long time to wipe down a one-bedroom apartment.
Not if you're worried about going to prison for a long time.
I mean, I guess that's true, but think about the size of a one-bedroom apartment. Like, that's going to take some work, but it's also not that, I mean, how many doors can you possibly have? Four? You know what I mean? A couple surfaces in the bathroom, a couple surfaces in the kitchen.
I mean, if you're halfway intelligent, which they aren't, clearly, you're still going to think about where they were.
Yes. So as soon as they're done with that, about 4:45 p.m., they head out. They take the bag and they throw it into a dumpster at a local fast food restaurant. Doesn't say which one. Then they go to McDonald's. Opens up at 5 o'clock. They drop off Victor. Victor wants to get some breakfast. They drop him off. Literally, Higgs just looks at him and says, keep your fucking mouth shut. He says, all right. Just like that. So Higgs and Haynes go from there straight over to Phyllis's house, right? So this is his baby mama that's going to be having the party, right? So they head over there about 5:30. Get in there, and she was actually back asleep. She gets up at 5, and she knows that she gets up at 5 because she has an alarm set every single day because she has a special needs son. She gets up, makes sure that he's taken care of for the morning, you know, his food, it's changed, he's all good to go, and then she goes back to bed. Well, then she wakes up about 10 o'clock that morning, and both Higgs and Haynes are already at her house. So what does she know? She knows that they weren't there at 5, but they were there at 10, right? So it could have been any time after that. We know from other testimony that it was about 5:30. That's got to be kind of freaky, though, right? You get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, you help your son out, you go back to bed, you wake up 10 o'clock in the morning, you got two grown men. Even if you know them, it would still be kind of weird, right?
100%.
I mean, I feel like that would be kind of awkward. I mean, I don't know. I know that it's a closer relationship.
You're not expecting anybody in your house.
Right.
It's going to be unsettling.
Right. You get up, you're like, whoa, what? You know, like, give me a second. Where's my coffee? You know what I mean? So, but Phyllis does say that, you know, they were there when she woke up, but then they spent the entire day helping her getting ready for everything for the party, you know? Well, that was her story initially. They get to court when it's actually time to go for the jury, and she says that she actually lied, obviously, about him being with her on Saturday night, the night of the 26th, right? And said that she basically thought that it had to do with the drug implications because she knew he was involved in the drug trade, and that she basically was just trying to help him out. Kind of chilling. She also remembered that during the party that the news was on the TV and that the story about the murders broke, and Higgs said, hey, I know that girl, talking about Tangie. Like, why would you even say that in that moment, knowing that you and the other guy at the party just had a major hand in this girl getting murdered? Like, can you imagine that?
Like I said,
you just can't help yourself.
The IQ is low.
Yeah. So she recants her entire story. To add stupidity on top of it, thank you very much. He also, you know how jailhouse phone calls are always recorded, right?
Sure.
He tries to call his other baby mama and suggests, kind of slick the way he did this. He said, hey, you remember me being at your house on the 26th, staying overnight that night? Wasn't that the night we got together? She said, no. Are you sure? Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was the night. Trying to get her to just agree so that he had a new alibi baked in, right? No, that doesn't work either. She actually testified on the stand that he, in fact, was not there. There was no chance. They tried to say for a minute that she just forgot it, you know, she was forgetful, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I don't know about...
She wasn't having it.
Forgetful don't usually hold up in court. You know what I mean? So he said, no, he was never there, never worked like that. So at this point, they have all three men in custody and a story that should lock everything up pretty nice and neat, right? Haynes did the shooting. Higgs was the guy that was telling people what to do. Here we go. Well, Victor ends up being charged with being an accessory. Okay. Which would ultimately end up, he ended up doing 5 years in prison for being an accessory to three murders. Higgs and Haynes both get charged with 3 counts of first-degree murder, kidnapping, and the gun charges, because they weren't supposed to be having guns. Haynes' story was that Riggs was the leader, and he intimidated him into committing the murders and was threatened by him and told him that if he didn't do it, that he was going to get hurt himself. Okay? Victor actually corroborates this, and he said that, yeah, he actually heard him say that if you don't do this, it's going to be you. A little different wording, same basic message, right?
Right.
And that's why he got out and fired the shots. Now, what I didn't understand was once you had the gun, because they both admitted that there was only one gun, why didn't that end it? You're the one with the gun now at this point. If you're Haynes, why are you not turning that gun back, right? Yeah. So on the stand at the sentencing, a tearful and apologetic Haynes begged for his life. And ultimately, he was spared. He was actually given life, no chance of parole. Admitted in court, 5 shots, murders 3 people in cold blood, gets life. Interesting, right? In a separate trial, completely away from it, Higgs is found guilty and given 9 death sentences plus 45 years. Obviously, immediately the protesting starts with this because the shooter gets life. The guy that didn't ever actually pull the trigger gets a death sentence. That's kind of crazy.
9 of them.
9 of them. Because there was the 3 counts of murder, the 3 gun charges, and the 3 counts of kidnapping. And the way that the laws work, that all falls together to where if you do one in commission of another,
right,
you can get the maximum for each one of those things.
Right.
Yep. So the prosecutor said that the threat from Higgs put him into a position of control of the situation and that his demeanor during the murder supports that he was the one calling the shots. He didn't get out and try to stop it. He didn't yell at him, what you doing? Nothing like that. I think that there's a valid point to be made there. Now, I think that it's very presumptuous, though, to think that you can understand what another person's always thinking. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, but didn't he say take care of him?
Yes, he did. All I'm saying is from a defense point of view, there's a million different ways that you could play that, you know? There's a lot of people that get so scared that they can't talk. You know what I mean? So all I'm saying, I'm not advocating. I'm just saying I feel like there's always room for discussion.
I know, but if he's going to be able to pull the trigger, he could say, I ain't doing this.
Yeah. So during the appeals process, it gets discovered that there's a fellow inmate that Higgs had made real good friends with. This last guy's last name is Williams. We'll just call him Williams for the sake of the story. He actually befriends him, and this two start talking about a lot of topics. He actually tells Williams that he had a friend that actually set him up with Tangie, and that invited her out. And she was the one who insisted that her friends go, and that's why he got his boys come along. You know, that way they were going out as a group date instead of going as a one-on-one, right? Well, he also tells him that this guy that set him up told him that she had to be taken care of or he was going to be in trouble with Big Mel. Big Mel is a gentleman named Melvin Grayson, well-known drug dealer from the D.C. area. He has been suspected in a couple of different murders, but they've never been able to make anything stick to him on that rap sheet as long as your arm. Known ties to heavy drug trade in multiple countries. Like, this guy is not unknown to anyone, right? Well, the appeals lawyers actually argue that Higgs was afraid for his life, but could not carry out the murders, so he asked Haynes to do it. So I have to do this to save my own life. Wait, I can't do it. You do it. So he's going to put pressure on a friend of his to do it. Victor and Haynes both said that he seemed to be some kind of afraid when he mentioned to other people that he knew her and that she might be friends with Big Mel, to where it sounds like there's a whole bunch of connectivity in here, but it never gets crystal clear exactly what it is, right? Well, to make things a little weirder, Big Mel actually visits Higgs in jail and called him multiple times just to chit-chat, see how things were going, how you holding up. Like, that seems like a very strange thing to do if you're already a person that's in a position where you might be in trouble with the law. You know what I mean? Like, those guys aren't dying to go run into the jails, right? Well, he was never actually implicated in any of these crimes, but earlier this year, he was actually picked up and he's facing a life sentence right now for being a major contributor into an 18-person drug ring in Washington, D.C.
Wow.
So even all these years later, not stellar, right? Another thing that makes this kind of interesting is that this case happens in Maryland, right? Remember I mentioned at the beginning this happens in Maryland? There's no death penalty in Maryland.
Womp womp.
In 2008, all prisoners on death row had their sentences commuted to life due to the law change. If they ever go back, they can't uncommute those. Every one of those is a life sentence unchanged, right? The issue is that the murders happened in a national park, which is federal ground, not state ground.
Uh-oh.
So federal law applies. The federal government is one who handles all of this. It's to the point where the state attorney general actually files to the Supreme Court of the United States to be able to commute this man's sentence and move him into a Maryland state-funded prison. This was rejected 6-3 by the Supreme Court with Sota Santamayor dissenting. Facts of this case were never really in doubt, other than the fact of whether or not he did or did not push Haynes to commit the murders, right? All of his writs of servitori, habeas corpus, they all run out. It's time for the execution. So this execution obviously is going to be controversial, in part because he was executed during a lame duck period. This was 4 days before Biden took office. This is the last federal execution we've had, and it's probably going to be the last one we have for quite a long time.
Really?
Yes, this just happened earlier this year, 2021, January the 16th. He was also tested positive for COVID-19 just a few weeks prior to this, right? And their attorney argued that with the concern of COVID-19, that he actually had real lung damage and that there could be a burning sensation during the entire experience that would be akin to waterboarding with your chest on fire.
Aww.
Okay. I will never listen to an argument like that as a reason. I'm not for drawing and quartering, at least most of the time. You know what I mean? But stuff like that, I'm never going to listen to that. The execution was actually postponed on January the 12th, but then they went ahead and moved ahead with it after they determined that he was fine physically to go through it. After eating a last meal consisting of Coke, pizza, and jelly donuts at 1:23 a.m., on January the 16th, 2021, Higgs was executed with lethal injection, a single dose of phenobarbital, which is done at the United States Penitentiary in Terre Haute, Indiana. His last words were, "I'd like to say I'm an innocent man. I did not order those murders." Interesting that he's going to hold it all the way to the end. He became the third and last inmate to be executed by the U.S. federal government in January of 2021. And the other two were Lisa Marie Montgomery, who we talked about a little bit on the show, and Corey Johnson. They were both executed on January 13th and 14th, respectively. So a couple questions now. How does Haynes not get the death penalty with this being a federal case? I guess I'm just perplexed by this entire thing. You kill three people on federal ground. It's a federal crime. How can a jury let this guy walk? He's still alive in prison right now.
I don't get it. I mean, you fired the shots. Right. You kill. You know, it's like I tell my kids.
Yeah.
If three of your friends jump off a bridge, you're going to do it too?
Exactly.
So just because somebody tells you to do it doesn't mean give the gun to the next guy.
Right. And like we talked about a little bit at the beginning, the single gun aspect of this I think is huge. If there's multiple guns in the car, I think that the fear is still legitimate and realized, right? In this situation, it's the only gun. I mean, he could have literally got out, turned to his right, double tapped him, and the show's over. You know what I mean? That's where I really struggle with the fact that he didn't get the death penalty because he rolled on the other guy.
So you're saying that he could have just shot the guy telling him to shoot the girls.
That's what I'm saying.
Been done.
Right.
Hell, he could have shot him in the leg. Been like, no.
But that's what I'm saying. He could have had a multitude of different things that he could have done once he was outside of the vehicle with the gun in his hand, knowing there wasn't another gun in the vehicle. That's where I have a real problem with what Haynes's sentencing was. That's where I don't like about that.
Agreed.
I think that that's terrible. Should Higgs' sentence have been commuted? The gentleman that was executed, should he have gotten life instead of death?
I mean, there was somehow there's some strong evidence that he was the orchestrator of all this. So
let me ask it this way then. If we accept that as fact, is being the orchestrator enough to execute somebody? If you orchestrate three murders but you never pulled the trigger, is that enough?
Yeah, I think so, because I mean, Charlie Manson's in prison right now.
Dead now, but yeah.
Well,
he was for a long time.
But he didn't kill nobody. He orchestrated it all.
It's true. I agree. I just wondered what your opinion was on it directly.
There's some people out there that are very influential, and if you tell them to do something, they might.
I agree completely. So I'll ask it this way again. I mean, kind of goes in conjunction with it, but does not pulling the trigger mean that a person should receive a maximum sentence of life?
I think it's still open to for debate.
Is there anything other than being an orchestrator that would lead you to that? What if you're cheering it on? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I'm trying to figure out another reason other than being the one that's calling the shots. If you're not calling the shots or pulling the trigger, I don't know what else that would be. I mean, and there have been other people, like we had the guy that was the driver.
Right.
That got it.
Right.
To where I didn't love that at all. I'm just curious. I'm just trying to, I feel like as we go through this, like there are still things that we have to unpack and kind of make sure that we're thorough as far as what the opinions are on here.
100%. Yeah, I can't think of any right now, but I'm sure there are other.
But we agree that shot callers and shot firers together are pretty much the same responsibility, right?
If you're out there pointing, this and somebody's listening to your instructions.
Yeah. Not to sound ridiculous here, but how stupid is it that COVID-19 was even used as an argument to not have an execution?
Apparently they went on with it anyways, right?
They did, but what I'm saying is, why would that be even a determining factor at this point?
Because those people that are saying that are people that don't want it to happen in the first place.
Yeah.
That's all.
I mean, that's true, but I just, I don't know. I'm not a fan of that. I know that people are grasping at straws on stuff like that, but
that's
come
all
on.
It is, yeah.
Come on. I mean, at some point, like, some of this stuff has to be stupid. Like, you're wasting the court's time and money.
Some, you know, if it was a man saying that, his wife was going to leave him because she didn't agree with the death penalty and he's involved.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know how deep the rabbit hole goes.
That's true, I guess.
I mean, I'm making that up, but, you know, you don't know.
Yeah. So, Victor here. Victor is not the best friends, but he's friends. He hangs out with the girl. Sounds like he did nothing wrong. I mean, by all accounts, the worst thing that I think anybody can say that he did wrong was he got back, right? After it was all said and done, didn't go directly to the authorities and didn't end up rolling over until he was already in trouble for a drug charge. All that said, do you think that 5 years was a fair, unfair, too much, not enough? for Victor?
I mean, weighing what we know from other cases, I mean, this guy's lucky he didn't get 10 years or more.
Right. I agree with that. But I also, this is where, like, cases like this, I would love to see Victor have gotten, like, 2 years hard labor. You know what I mean?
Do they still do the hard labor?
They don't. But, like, in a situation like this, that's what I thought of. Like, bro, I ain't trying to mess up your whole life. That being said, you got to really pay for something. And instead of just you go sitting and playing cards for the next 5 years, you know, complaining that there's not enough salt on your food, how about you get out here in the yard and break some rocks? You know what I mean? Like, that's where I think something like that, like, actually to go out and learn your lesson. With it being a younger person, I hate the idea of losing 5 years. You know what I mean? Especially if you had no idea this was going on, which it doesn't seem like he had any involvement in the planning, execution, any of it at all. The only thing he did was help throw some stuff in a bag, get a shower, and go home. So, I don't know. I don't love it. Whatever he gets for the drug charge, it's a completely separate thing. But 5 years for this, I didn't love it. I even thought like two might have been okay. I mean, years are a long ass time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like to sit here and talk about, think about where you were 2 years ago. You know?
I know, but you gotta... I heard this growing up from my parents, especially my dad. You know, don't catch yourself in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah.
And you gotta... At some point, he knew this wasn't going... Whether he saw the gun, something happened where he should have been like, you know what? I'll find a different ride.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's true. I don't know. I guess the fact that we can debate 5 years, maybe it was a right about him. You know what I mean? If we can see an argument both ways.
If he's legitimately innocent and had no idea any of this was going to go down, I kind of find it hard to believe, though, that he didn't have an idea that, man, maybe some shit's going to go down.
Yeah.
I see the gun.
Yeah. Like we've talked about before, if there was a 48-hour moratorium, though, I feel like it would have saved this kid any jail time.
Right. Agreed.
You know, you're absolved. If you didn't pull the trigger and you weren't a mastermind, but you're going to call it out within 48 hours of knowing.
I think this would help prosecutors across the board.
Yep.
If they had this.
I agree.
You have a system that allows somebody that was there but not necessarily involved in the crime.
Yep.
Come to you. As long as you give them immunity, boom.
Yeah. I still think that's like, so far, I think that's the most golden idea we've had so far on this show. You know?
Immunity and 10K. Put some fucking money on it.
No, I don't think you want to incentivize. So let me ask this then. If they do that, and then on the other end of it, you find out that they're lying, trying to get that 10K, then what do they get? They get the 10 years?
They get the 10 years. Oh, yeah.
Okay. So, well, I mean,
you have to have people. I mean, if I was...
I'm just saying there's got to be a program for it that's actually kind of foolproof.
If I was a lawmaker, there would nobody would be... I mean, you're calling fake accusations on people, and you get busted doing that? Mm-hmm. Oh, you get the penalty they could have gotten.
Yeah, it's got to be a crime. I'm just trying to think our way through it.
Yeah.
So, no, I like it, though.
I mean, you don't have to put a monetary value on it, but I just think that doing something to incentivize it just a little bit.
Yeah, I like it. So last question of the night, as always, was justice served in this case?
Well, that's a good one tonight. I kind of half, 50%, I think.
I agree with you. That was literally going to be my answer. I think that they got one right. I think they got one wrong. And the last one is going to be up for debate, so that's a pretty good 50-50. So, interesting case. We look forward to hearing what you guys think. Don't be afraid to reach out to us at any time. If you're struggling yourself, please make sure you pick up the phone. Call 1-800-662-4357 for the National Mental Health Awareness Hotline. Somebody will be there to help you.
Absolutely. So if you're having bad thoughts about hurting yourself or others, or just can't kick that substance abuse, call the number.
Thank you guys so much for joining us. Talk to you again real soon.
Stay safe.